The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
So, hello. Welcome. What I think we can do is maybe just go around this. We have a couple students. Just tell us who you are. Maybe the faculty can introduce ourselves. I'm J.A. Shimoto, and I teach immigration, and I'm in the Immigrant Justice Club.
I'm Jamie Chuang. I teach international law and also labor, migration, and human trafficking.
I'm Rafael Hernandez. I am 1L, and I guess this summer I'm working for OGAR.
Great.
Nancy Abramowitz. I teach pension and employee benefits, which is the labor aspect here, but I also direct our tax clinic where we take the women who are trafficked from the other clinics, and we handle their tax problems, so we get to see it in different ways.
Oh, great! I didn't
know that. Oh, yeah.
I'm Amanda Frost, and I teach civil procedure, federal courts, and immigration law. And I work with a clinic whenever I can.
I'm Jeremy Duru. I teach civil procedure and sports law. And most of my sports law involvement has been related to employment discrimination. That's my participation here.
I'm James Dewey. I'm a 1L. I don't know. You'll hear more from me.
I'm Sarah Vogt. I'm a 1L, and I'm working at the Immigrant Legal Resource Center this summer and EOIR in the fall.
And
I'm Kristen Donovan. I'm 1L. I'm interested in immigrant worker rights, and I'm working at Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid Farm Worker.
Great. Rick Wilson, I'm the director of the Human Rights Clinic, and I teach a couple of these guys in the 1L elective on public interest practice.
Great. So what we were going to do is talk just a little bit about some resources that are available around course selection. And we can keep it pretty informal, and folks can feel free to jump in. I can get us started. So do you guys, the students, know about pathways? Yes? Okay, maybe. Some have. Some. So if you go on the WSL website at the top here, this minuscule font, it says pathways.
That screen is...
That's very sensitive.
You have troubling.
Okay. All right, there it is, Pathways. So Pathways is basically a part of the website where we have...
There you go.
What is every time?
What's it doing now?
Oh, there it is. Okay, cool. So it's structured around the different kind of areas of focus of your course of study. And it provides a narrative about different ways in which to structure, even just to conceptualize a career or a focus area within that course of study. Hey. And as you can see, there is one for immigration, and there's a separate one for employment law. There's also, what is that? And then there's, for those of you interested in kind of international law issues, there's a separate one there. So just for our purposes, I'm going to click on immigration. It's very sensitive. Okay, great. Cool. I'm going to get this on. All right, so then you can see there's a little narrative here around immigration careers and the different kinds of careers. So I would encourage you guys to look at this if you haven't already. But what's most important for your purposes and for our purpose today is the bottom of it, where it talks about different courses. All right, so
For those of you who are interested in immigration and thinking about, okay, what classes do I want to take? And Rick, Amanda, feel free to jump in here as well. So what we have here as foundational courses include the survey course, which is taught every semester, the administrative law course, right? In addition to that, in the fall, asylum and refugee law is going to be taught. There's also employment and family law course that's being taught, immigration law. So, Janie, is your class in the fall? TBD?
It usually is. I'm not sure what my schedule is.
So, the trafficking persons class, for those of you interested in immigrant and workers' rights, is a great class. And then in the spring, there'll probably be some other electives as well. It just depends. But these are the key electives relating to immigration. Also, for those of you who are rising 2Ls, a couple of you mentioned externships. That's another way to supplement what you're doing. We do have here some resources for you guys if you haven't seen it already, some kind of key externship posts in some of the in these practice areas. And so that's another way to, just to get some more experience and to supplement what you're learning in the classroom. We also have, of course, the clinics. That selection process has concluded, but the clinics do have Dean's Fellow positions.
For the summer.
For the summer, mm-hmm. Yeah. And during the school year, it's a way to get your feet wet with some of the clinical work. And the only final thing I'll mention with respect to immigration law is that language ability is really important, especially if you're interested in doing direct services. It's, of course, you can have a successful career in immigration not speaking Spanish, but if you're really interested in doing on-the-ground direct services work, it helps a lot, and it makes you much more competitive. So it's something to think about in terms of what you do with your time during your second year, how you spend your summers, is there a way to either strengthen or acquire some of that second language ability?
And I just want to jump in there and say, I haven't confirmed this, but I've heard that there's actually an ability to take language classes up at main campus. And so that's one thing that you could try to work in your schedule. And also I was inspired by someone I met at CARE Coalition, which is a local organization that works closely with detained populations. She did not speak Spanish at the start of the summer after she graduated, and she did tapes, a combination of like sort of intensive study with tapes and like a 2-week homestay in Guatemala, and got herself to a point where she's not fluent, but she can communicate with the population using a lot of the vocabulary she needs. So don't be too intimidated by the idea that if I don't know this language, I can't do this, because she did it in 6 weeks, and you guys have longer.
Yeah, definitely can be done. And then, of course, the other point that we would make about kind of folks interested in immigration and immigrants' rights is to look at it intersectionally. So Kristen mentioned like immigration and workers' rights, and that's where we're seeing a lot of growth in terms of employment opportunities, is at the intersection of immigration and criminal, or immigration and workers' rights, or immigration and family law with all the kids stuff happening. So exploring those intersectional interests is a good idea through coursework. So taking family law, taking criminal defense courses if you're interested in that, et cetera, right? Taking employment law courses is a good way to position yourself kind of as an expert in both fields, so that you have a broader range of employment prospects as you head towards graduation. So I'll pause there. I don't know if others want to weigh in with thoughts about immigration or asylum or.
The only other thought I have, it doesn't really make sense to list it up there because it's a first-year elective, but a huge part of immigration law is statutory interpretation, and that's a useful skill to have in any field, almost any field these days. So sort of keep an eye out for courses that would help you develop those skills, and hopefully an immigration course will certainly talk about it, as do you, Josh. And it also comes up in the public law first-year elective. And I imagine it's sort of a component of a lot of different courses, but just keep in mind that that's what you're doing as an immigration lawyer. You're interpreting statutes and regulations, and thinking about how to those interpretive techniques, I think, is very helpful to improving your skills.
Should we move on to the employment and labor piece?
All right.
So
So I don't know if others have more specific things to say about this, but as it says on the pathways, you know, in terms of employment and labor, there's two core courses. There's the, it's called labor and employment law, kind of survey course, and then there's a course on employment discrimination, I think both of which are recommended, that they're not prerequisites, as it says, and should probably take both. Again, I think for those interested in immigrants' rights, both are good classes to take. And then BA, there's an intersection, obviously, with employment law. International perspective on employment law is useful, so Jamie's class is great. I think there may, is there another labor?
Sometimes,
yeah. I don't think it's, yeah, international labor and employment law, right? That's what I was thinking of. And, of course, experiential, all the clinical stuff. Leslie can maybe talk about the work in her clinic. And
so, sure, I can do it. Yeah. I think that at the end of the day, so my background before joining the faculty was as a civil rights attorney who did a lot of employment work, both discrimination and wage and hour cases. And so, you know, from that experience, you learned a lot of the clinical experience of actually dealing with clients. And navigating that process becomes really critically important to things like employment, where you're representing individuals or groups of individuals in their cases, in cases involving, you know, problems with their employers, whether it's discrimination or not having been paid the minimum wage or not receiving overtime or things like that. The civil advocacy clinic, I think it's still listed there as general practice clinic. We need to go back and fix that, I think, probably in all of these. It's now called the civil advocacy clinic, but we actually do have as part of our docket a pretty significant wage and hour practice that represents largely a good number of immigrants, actually. Not entirely, but given the dynamics of the workforce here in the D.C. area, we do see a number of immigrant workers who've been exploited. And we also do unemployment compensation, which is another area in employment law. So there is kind of that focus for our particular clinic. I know the J.S.'s Immigrant Justice Clinic also does a little bit of that work as well. But if you're interested in employment, we're definitely, I guess, the Civil Advocacy Clinic is one of the clinics that has a pretty, probably the largest docket of those types of cases.
Jeremy or Nancy, anything more to add on the employment clinical piece?
If you're not going to go into a separate benefits piece, I'll add this here.
I wasn't going to. I probably couldn't speak to that very effectively, so feel free.
Okay, so I'll let it spill over. First of all, in the labor and employment piece, the tax clinic, I should tell you, does a fair amount of work for immigrants, and there are lots of peculiar tax situations that immigrants find themselves in through having been exploited by employers in the United States, and that's something we see a fair amount of. For those of you who are interested in labor and employment generally, a related area is employee benefits, pension, healthcare, and other sorts of fringes that come along with the employment relationship. And I teach a pension and employee benefit law course here, which covers the governing statute, which is ERISA, if anyone has heard of that. I teach it as a course that basically follows the statute, which is part tax, part labor. And I teach it as a survey. There are no prerequisites, but I also try and teach it with enough depth, because there are jobs in this area, to have you come out and say, for those who've taken it, that they should be considered as somebody who has enough skill with the statute that they should be the equivalent of a year's experience or something like that. And we usually have pretty good job results from that course. And for those of you who are interested, we have our annual pension workshop coming up April 13th. It's open to all students. It's an extraordinary opportunity. We have the Assistant Secretary of Labor, who's in charge of all pension things, somebody from BBGC. We have some alums coming who are partners of big firms in town, and these are people who handle employee benefits sometimes from the labor perspective and sometimes from the managerial perspective. So there's something on my board, and that will be posted April 13th from 3:30 to 5:30, 3:30 to 6:30.
It's a Monday.
It's a Monday.
Yeah. Jamie,
well, I think many bases have been covered. I guess offer a compliment, which is to say, obviously, you know, your course selection is a crucial part of your experience here, but I wouldn't forget about the resources that you have outside of the actual classroom. That is to say, professors who you won't be taking courses from either because you just weren't able to get into them or didn't work in your schedule. But they're, you know, going to professors, to their office hours, even if you're not in their class, and talking to them about their experiences, if they've done something that you're interested in, is a really great way to learn more about the field and get to know somebody who's been involved in the field. And of course, you know, taking the opportunity to do guided research projects as you get to your 2L and 3L years, that's an incredible way to explore the area further and build a relationship with someone who might be able to give you a reference in the area. So think about what you sign up for in terms of your courses, but also think about building a relationship with the faculty in the areas of interest.
The other thing that I'll mention, I agree with Jeremy entirely that you want to think about taking advantage of the broad, of not just of the courses and the opportunities, and also the faculty who are maybe doing research assistants in different areas and doing great things that would be helpful to you in terms of thinking about what it is you might want to do. But in terms of the one that I always, whenever I have a chance to tell students, take pre-trial litigation or pre-trial advocacy. When I was in law school, I took trial ad because that's just what everyone takes, and it seems interesting and fun. I don't even know if they offered pre-trial, but at the end of the day, what would have served me better would have been to take pre-trial, because if you think you want to be a litigator, that's the work. Like, that is what civil litigators do. If you're someone who thinks that you want to be standing up in front of the court every day, then you're thinking more like a prosecutor or a public defender, but there really aren't as many civil attorneys who find themselves in court, you know, multiple times a month. I mean, maybe you'll find yourself in court a few times a year. For different things, but that part is helpful, and it's good to be able to develop the skills that come from trial advocacy. But pre-trial really is the bread and butter.
So fewer than 1% of all cases, civil cases, go to trial.
Exactly, yeah. And so that is, you know, drafting a complaint, drafting discovery, thinking about motions to dismiss the motions for summary judgment. That's the work that we do on a daily basis, or I did on a daily basis as a litigator. And so I definitely encourage students to take that. If you're thinking about impact litigation, then the advanced civil procedure courses that are available are very helpful. Having an idea of what Rule 23 is and what it means to be involved in a class action is actually helpful if that's the work that you want to do. Jeremy and I both did that work actually for a period of our careers. And that particular course, when it's taught, sometimes it's taught and it doesn't have a civil rights and human rights focus, but often if I teach it, it does. I know that Jasmine Harris this year has taught it with really a civil rights and a human rights focus and impact litigation focus, which for those of you who are thinking that might be the kind of work you want to do, it's really helpful to have that prior to actually engaging it in practice.
And before I rain on everybody's parade, litigation is great fun, but the truth of the matter is, and we really need to recognize this as a huge trend in the law, most people in most contexts have given up their right to go to court and have signed away that right, and employees, consumers, lots of people, and are left with, as a litigation forum, arbitration. So thinking about a course in alternative dispute resolution is something that may also be of interest to you.
I would add, I guess, one of the things that has been most fun about teaching this first-year elective and looking at public interest law and public interest practice is that everything we're talking about, although you're sort of riding the intersection of public law, private law, when we're talking about the careers that we're talking about today, it does feel to me like certainly immigration, I count among the sort of public interest, public practice areas because if you think about how you get recruited and how you get a job, how you get your summer internships, it's not the sort of traditional pathways of, you know, interview week and sign up and get your time with a big firm and have those kinds of meetings. So I think designing your curriculum too, your courses that you want to take are follow a little bit different path, and it's a path I've encouraged the students in that class to hang on to, despite the sort of pressure of conformity in law school to stick with, you know, what everybody else is doing, and there's a lot of pressure to do that. I'm a big fan of choosing your own path, particularly given the amount of money you're paying to go to school. So I'm also a big fan of not taking courses that people suggest that you absolutely have to take for the bar. So the sort of standard bar review courses. If you want to take them, because you want to try them on, have at it. But I wouldn't take a course because you're fearful of the bar. I think everybody who's in this school can pass the bar if you study and you're diligent. And you have so few choices in law school, ultimately, over six semesters to pick, that I'm a huge fan of choosing the path you love rather than the path you think is the one you have to follow in order to get your law license. Now, others may disagree, but that's my take.
The one exception I'll think of, I actually remember asking the director of our human rights program when I was in law school whether I should take, we call it a corporation, I think it's business associations here. I asked her, like, what courses should I take that I'm not thinking of, and she actually said, take business associations.
Yeah.
And it was actually excellent advice, and it was one of the few kind of bar courses that I took, because at the end of the day, and I can't speak to this much from the perspective of how it might intersect with immigration law, but definitely from the employment perspective.
Yep.
You know, the companies are the employers. So understanding how they are structured and organized becomes critically important. Understanding how to find out information about their corporate structure and their board and the decision makers, and all of it ends up becoming critically important. So that's kind of one of those bar courses that I might not have thought of as being something I wanted to take, that I am very pleased that I did take. I probably also should have taken Fed Tech, should have taken tax, because that comes up as well for many of our clients. There end up being tax implications for different decisions that they're trying to make. So there are, I think, a few of those core classes that have some real connection to what you may want to do. So it's helpful to talk to some, to talk to other professors about what that. I'm so happy that I asked the question because I wouldn't have, I think, automatically assumed I should take it, and it was good advice.
I don't know if anybody's interested in the international piece of it. So for international labor law, there is that course that I think Owen Hernstadt teaches. I teach a course on labor migration, which looks at it internationally as well. We look at different sorts of guest worker programs and recruitment strategies and the jurisdictional problems when you have cross-border labor recruitment. There's also summer offerings. So there's a course being offered this summer by Carol Pierre, who's the Deputy Secretary of Labor in charge of International Labor Affairs Bureau, ILAB. She's offering a one-week intensive course this summer that will cover, sort of give a basic primer on the ILO, but also the U.S. government's interaction with the international labor system. And then there's a summer program on, it's in Geneva. There's an international labor component of it. Where that's taught out of the International Labor Organization. It's a series of speakers from the ILO and other, we're going to try to get in speakers from other organizations and hopefully a trade union. So that's another opportunity if you're interested in the international realm. Those are opportunities to keep in mind. And I second the corporations piece of it. And I was just asking about whether or not there are courses that could give you some insight into structuring of subcontracting chains, right? Mm-hmm. Because when you're looking at labor supply chains, understanding how that subcontracting works, because that's the way that
the corporate veil,
right? Exactly. Defeats.
Avoid tax responsibilities. Leave people in terrible tax situations with tax clinic.
Labor law, all of that.
Those are good suggestions. So I don't know if you guys have questions. We could certainly do one-on-one advising. You know, we have some time yet, but if folks have questions that you think you're comfortable airing,
that everyone could benefit
from. Everyone could benefit from, yeah.
I'm kind of intrigued by brought up, you know, the kind of the question, you know, what should I take that I haven't thought of? And I would be curious as to, you know, if other people had a similar course that they either somebody had tipped them off to, or that they, looking back, wish they had taken that would have been very helpful. Comes to mind, and you know, helpful in what you're doing. What you want to do.
I put admin law
on
that shirt list. That was one. I loathed it in law school, but it was because I had the teacher from Ferris Bueller days off as my teacher. But as a substantive matter, I just think it's almost essential for any kind of practice, and certainly for immigration. That's where immigration law takes place.
I think it should be a required course.
Yeah,
I agree. For everybody.
So it's in the foundational group, but it's not a course that you immediately think of. But it's just so. It governs so much activity in any interaction with government or any other way. So
I think we've got some great people here who teach it. I take admin law, also, and I'm probably another one that I should have.
Great faculty.
We have great faculty teaching it, but they admit all of it. Yeah. It's a bit of a dry course. Like it will not be like it, you know, it's not as entertaining it's a building block foundational course, and most law is in the form of regulation. So you got to understand how those work. And I find myself telling some third-year students, you know, if the regulation conflicts with the statute trumps the regulation, and not everyone knows that. And that's, like, a key fact that you would get in administrative law, and hopefully you could get it anyway. But, you know, just there's some really basic stuff you'll learn in that class. Mm-hmm. I second that. I was going to say, one other thing I was going to say is I would just advise not to get too niche. Just because no one's going to hold it against you. No employer's going to say, why didn't you take the third available class in immigration law? You took two, but not three, or you took one, but not two. I think you can show your interest in the subject. If you're interested, of course, take a course in the subject, maybe two. But there's no point in taking nothing but one subject. I see students who just are in love with immigration law, want to do nothing but immigration. And I say, look, you clearly have shown that through your resume, that you're deeply interested, you have background, experience, skills. But this is law school at the time to spread out, and you may find you either change interest later on, or there's intersections in immigration law where you need to know family law, you need to know employment law. So there's no reason to get too niche too quickly, I think.
And you don't want to be in a position where your resume really basically has only prepared you for one type of position.
Yeah.
And then what if that job isn't available that year? Or like what if that, you know, what if there are, you know, only so few positions that you want to be able to have a little bit of flexibility in what you can do.
There's two public law classes, right? So there's the initial elective one, and then there's a more advanced. Public law, admin law.
Okay.
There's a first year elective that's right. Called public law, which is like it's not just administrative law. So you're in it. Is that what you're saying? Everyone teaches a little differently. I used to teach it. But it's got an administrative law component, but it's not entirely the way I taught it. There was a significant amount of statutory interpretation, as well as administrative law, as well as legislative process. Mm-hmm. And is your question, should you also take the administrative law course?
Yeah.
Yes. You and I can talk too, if you want, because it depends on who you take it from. Mm-hmm. If administrative law was not a significant component of the course, then I would also suggest taking.
Question about externee during the TL year and just generally what faculty would recommend in terms of how many courses to pair with that. Does it depend on, you know, the difficulty of the courses or how many credits? Just trying to figure out how many hours I would want to be externing and how many courses to take. It's a hard question.
It's a great question.
It's a very good question. I don't know the answer.
You know, my sort of classic path for here and anywhere else is probably just what you're suggesting, Kathy. I'd say maybe, you know, you do your first year and you've got a couple more little requirements, but doing an externship in your second year, great experience, summers as well, and then doing a clinic in your third year or the other way around. So that you're out the door and you're getting immersed in some practice area, I think those are invaluable experiences. as far as balancing the hours, I can't tell you how many students I have in clinic who are doing an externship and doing clinic, and I think they're crazy, but they want to.
I have never had a student who didn't say,
yeah,
if I had thought this through, yeah, I would not have done these together.
I wouldn't be doing this. But I think that there's that combination of the sort of pressure to make your resume look as fat as possible and make your and get as many experiences in the 3-year time that you have to push you in that direction. But I think you have to think pretty carefully about particularly those things that conflict with overlapping time commitments like clinic and an externship. So, but doing an externship and coursework, I think that's a very sensible thing to do. In fact, I very much encourage it. Either I just wouldn't stack up the ones that require, you know, 15 hours, 20 hours, 10 hours even outside of campus, because every day you spend away is less time for you to structure things that need to take place here because of other commitments that you have. But and that may include law review or anything else.
Which,
yeah.
What are the other activities?
Yeah.
That you,
right. That you're taking on your the student clubs and activities and those kinds of things.
It doesn't serve you to take on so much that you don't do well in all of it. Like it doesn't serve you to have a great externship, but your grades fall significantly that semester because you just overdid it. That's actually not going to be helpful in the end. So
right.
It's a little bit of an individual decision. I mean, I'm someone who's always been of the opinion of really being thoughtful about what courses you put together with what other activities that you set yourself up to succeed instead of setting yourself up to be as challenged as humanly possible every
right.
single semester.
Right.
I think that there's a balance there and that you'll find that students who do well figure out how to think about how to craft, you know, they're not going to take their two huge courses that they know are going to be very difficult or that they know are challenging with their externship and four other activities that like that you try to be really thoughtful about how you're putting it together. And I think those students who are thoughtful about it have a much easier time doing well overall.
Your comment makes me think of Evidence as well, which is another one of those courses that's not on the list. It's a bar course, but it's also we've talked about litigation. Almost every clinic requires Evidence as a prerequisite or co-requisite, so that's something you also want to be putting into your calculus about. If you're interested in litigation, all the more so. But I would say certainly for Human Rights Clinic, I think it's fine to be doing it at the same time that you're in the clinic. It's not a huge loss to not have that because the administrative law rules don't follow the formal federal rules, so you can get away without it. But it's a great course as a sort of structural approach to proof and how you deal with it in a court. I'm happy to talk to folks individually.
Yeah,
if you have other
questions,
you have other things you want to ask.
Right, and if folks just want to approach individually.
Right.
Thanks for coming.